It had to be a very exciting time for the chiropractic colleges in the 70s. That's how far back we're going, folks, okay? Because what happened in the 70s is that because of CCE accreditation, the plague was put upon the chiropractic colleges to hire basic sciences faculty. And that's when we sort of showed up. I showed up at Palmer in 1982. And when I showed up at Palmer in 1982, basically, I walked in and I was told that I was going to teach public health. And I said, that's wonderful. What do I teach? And everybody looked at me and said, well, make sure they get past boards. I'm like, all right, and what does that mean? And as I sort of looked at the standards, and now mind you folks, these are the standards in 2000, and even in 2000, the only statements that were made about public health or wellness in the CCE guidelines were that chiropractors are primary health care providers, and as such, they are in charge of wellness promotion. The only other thing that you found somewhere hidden in the rest of it was that courses in things like microbiology, parasitology, virology, and my favorite, sanitation and hygiene, will be taught at the chiropractic colleges. Okay? So mind you, from 82 going on into 2000, I still have no idea of what I'm supposed to be teaching. Aha, 2001. All of a sudden, now this is it, folks. This is the only new edition, all right? This now is a specific blurb that does talk about a particular competency. So up until that point, what I was doing is I was addressing sanitation and hygiene, and public health consisted of a three-hour course where a good third of it was parasitology, another third of it was virology, and, you know, sanitation and hygiene was less than even a third of that class. But at that particular time, there were exciting things going on because that model curriculum was proposed. There was discussion among APH members, the chiropractic division here, and at that time, like I said, I've been coming to these meetings and participating for the last 25 years or so. The emphasis was going toward, well, we need to do more wellness, we need to get Healthy People 2010 guidelines in there. And also, the other thing that was happening in education was, you've got to look at your students as adult learners, and we deal with adult learners in a different fashion. Okay. So, I sat there and I thought, well, what am I going to do next? But at least finally now I had something to go on. I had this Promote Wellness, Public Health Information, and Lifestyle Counseling. And about at the same time, I believe it was probably about 2000 and maybe two or three, that the National Board of Chiropractors sent a letter to the colleges saying that they are going to be testing on Healthy People 2010. And remember my mandate? Do everything that they pass national boards. So at this time, I proposed to our curriculum committee that we sort of make a change. Instead of talking about worms and germs, maybe perhaps we should start talking about Healthy People 2010. Maybe we should start talking about, basically, community health. And at that time, because there was also this whole idea of adult learners, I decided to do something a little bit different. And by the way, it took 2 years to get this through our curriculum committee. But I decided, why should I teach? I'm going to let students learn. So when I decided to do that, instead of having a didactic class, I was simply going to have students get the textbook, assign reading in the textbook, give them a little bit of a carrot as far as giving them points just simply for showing up to class, and also testing them on the material that they read. But on top of that, I felt that it was also important for them to go into the literature and find out what is there. So the assignment was, when you read the chapter, and by the way, as far as community health, it did cover all those Healthy People 2010 concepts. You know, the leading health indicators, alcohol, diet, mental health, all these things were in the book. And so what we then did is they also went out and they found an article that related to the readings. And what I found, you know, I have to learn over time too, is I found that many times they would sort of rush into class and really not read the article. I decided, well, maybe they should write a little narrative about what is in their article. So this is what started, and we started this actually in July of 2005. So mind you, up until July of 2005, I was doing worms and germs in my classes. Well, lo and behold, in a way, CCE competencies caught up with me because I was already doing it. And all of a sudden, in February, these are the competencies. And as you notice, one of them talks about leading health indicators, and the other one talks about identifying resources and materials to educate patients. So I'm like, hey, I'm ahead of all this already. And I decided, well, sorry about that, I keep pushing the wrong button here. I decided that what I'd like to do is I'd like to measure one of the outcomes to see if my students actually learned any of this, and does this in any way relate to what they're going to do later in the clinic. And so I did call whatever he called himself, the human clinical, whatever Dana is here, to say, hey, how do I do this? How do I... I said, hey, you know, number one, do I need IRB, whatever it is that I need, and what's a legitimate, what is legitimate in terms of, because again, remember, I'm not trained to do research, I'm basically teaching in the classroom. And so it was suggested to me that yes, I can do it, and so we'll see what I did. Oh man, I keep going backwards. All right. So the question that I wanted to ask was, does classroom information incorporate into clinical practice? But now, before I did that, remember, I'm teaching them in the fourth trimester. They go into clinic about seventh trimester. They're active in clinic in eighth, ninth, and tenth trimester. So the other concern that I had is, how do I know that what they did in class is really and truly what I'm measuring, as opposed to something else that happened between the end of fourth try and the beginning when they went into clinic? So one of the things that I looked at were our patient intake forms. What's on our patient intake forms? And these did discuss vitamins, supplements, smoking, whatever. You can read this. And this form came in May of 2005, and this is still the current form that's being used. And I just sort of, you know, not really a good research thing, but I did go over and I talked to our faculty. I said, have you guys been doing these new CC standards? Now, mind you, these only came into play as of February of this year. All right, so pretty much found out that, no, we're gearing up to do it, but we really haven't done too much. So then my question was, well, you know, what do I do? And again, Dana said it was legitimate to just go ahead and ask students how many patients do they see in the last week, and of those patients, you know, what topics do they talk about? Well, the one thing that I did learn about our Palmer students, not all of them, but some of them, is that even at the end of the ninth trimester, they do have a problem with following directions. Notice it said, indicate a number. And what would I get? You know, how many patients did you see? Sometimes most of them did put down a number, but some put down yes. Then when I asked them other questions as to, you know, how many talked about this topic or another, some indicated numbers, some put X's, some put checks. So this is basically a self-portrait, okay? I'm sitting there going, well, you know, I wrote this abstract, now I'm going to give this presentation. What am I going to tell these people? So the best that I could come up with is I had a vague number. Now, the way you have to look at this is that the February 2007 class was my baseline. This was still my worms and germs class. Okay, this is the class that was completing ninth try but did not have this other method of teaching. They were still the ones that were looking at virology and parasitology. And again, if you notice, there is a little difference in patient visits, but remember, we are in Davenport, Iowa, and if it snows, patients don't come. So that's a little different, too. But all in all, the 6.13 visits is about 558 patient visits is what we are talking about, and we are talking about 86 students that responded, and of those 86 students, they had the 558 patient visits. And then sort of the same thing in June and October. But since I have all these X's and check marks and everything else, I decided that what I really wanted to know was, did the student just broach any of these topics with a patient? To me, that was more important than how many patients have whatever problem. To me, is were the students aware that they should at least talk about some of these subjects? So here's my outcome. In February, which is the worms and germs, as far as the nutrition, the exercise, and weight loss, I mean, you know, these are such preliminary outcomes. There's only one data point, so I'm not going to make any big, you know, assumptions or anything that there was really any difference. Where I did find a difference is I believe that in the mental health portion, there's quite a bit of difference. And that's because the students spent a week discussing basically mental health issues, that there is a problem. Many students were quite surprised that apparently such a great extent of the population does have mental health issues. And again, they went out and they found articles, and so therefore they were much more involved in collecting this information rather than my standing there and saying things like, you know, smoking is bad. So anyway, when it comes to mental health, I do think that some of the things that they learned in the classroom did transfer into their clinical practice, because both the June and the October classes were those who had actually read a textbook and looked up some articles. I find it interesting, illicit drugs was not on our intake form, but yet 8% of the students and 10% in October did talk to their patients about, you know, did talk to a patient about those topics. And then again, the other ones that I feel are interesting is because the intake form does talk about STDs and sexual behavior, and the intake form does talk about violence and domestic abuse, but yet the class that did not read the textbook, no one approached any of these subjects with their patients, whereas the students that read the book, at least 8% of them or 9% of them did approach the violence issue, and 11 and 6% approached the sexual behavior. So once again, this is really very preliminary data. I don't have great statistics on this, but as far as I'm concerned, if you do expect students to share in the responsibility for their learning as opposed to sort of just sitting back and you know, passively listening maybe, and if they do build a foundation, if it sort of is inculcated in them that these things are important, when you put them in an environment that empowers them and encourages their learning, I think that there is some preliminary indication that this method of teaching does transfer into clinical practice.